This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
We welcome you in. It is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM on the Tuesday of week one in the National Football League. I'm Ben Wilson filling in for Patrick Maher with Michael Pritchard. Not Michael Lombardi.
Michael.
It's Michael
okay.
Pritchard. We're going full names.
Yes, we are.
Pritch, because it's week one.
Okay.
You know how much you like calling me Benjamin. This is your Tuesday crew for the Lombardi Line. Mike Pritchard, former NFL wide receiver, national champion at Colorado. And I'm Ben Wilson. We'll be in the studio here, Circa Sportsbook Studio, downtown Las Vegas, every Tuesday here in for the Lombardi Line. I'll be with Michael Lombardi tomorrow. Michael starts his six-day-a-week stretch tomorrow there here, Pritch, because it is week one. Can you believe it, though? We ready to go? We're through Labor Day, and we're like 2 days away from actual NFL football to talk
Ben,
about.
I started counting down about 10 weeks ago, to be honest with you.
But then
I know, right? But my countdown, yeah, it's always shocking to finally have football this week. You know, Thursday night couldn't get any better than that, certainly the matchup that we have. But no, it's crazy to think about, because normally we would have that Thursday preseason action, and then we'd gear up, but we actually had a bye week to kind of get ready for the season two is better. So looking forward to it. I think it's going to be an outstanding year. Each and every year is so different. So I'm anticipating that happening in 2022 with the National Football League as well.
Yeah, what we had instead of one more week of preseason, which nobody really actually wanted, was a week of college football to now overreact to and figure out a whole lot of changes in the futures market. We'll start, Mike, with what we saw last night, Clemson and Georgia Tech. Now, if you laid the 24 with Clemson, you're waking up this morning, if you didn't really watch the game, at least morning on the West Coast, you're thinking, oh, nice, easy, easy peasy, 41-10 there for Clemson. But it was certainly not straightforward for a Georgia Tech team that's only won 9 games combined over the last 3 seasons. They were within 4, like, pretty late into, you look at into the second quarter, 14-10 game at one point. Clemson needs a late pull away there as Georgia Tech really melts down the stretch. And the big question coming out of last night was the performance of DJ Uiagalelei. The quarterback competition between he and Cade Klubnik has now been reignited after DJ, let's just say, was less than stellar. I don't know if 19 of 32, 209 yards and a QBR of 39.4 qualifies as less than stellar. Mike, I certainly think it does, but it's probably underwhelming as you could look, wouldn't you say, for a 41-10 win?
I mean, Ben, less than stellar or just struggling. Let's just be real with it. The guy was struggling and for a lot of reasons, and we'll get into that, but the capping of the game, I mean, I think everybody anticipated Clemson being better defensively or being overwhelming defensively, and they were out of Georgia Tech to the tune of 6 3-and-outs. 3-and-outs are 3 plays and punting. You can't be aggressive at all. You don't feel like you can be aggressive, and certainly we saw that. So maybe some advantages, could have taken some advantages in-game as that game was tight 14-10 because Clemson was struggling offensively. Now, there's no excuse for that. Think about it. You had all spring ball and you had all training camp to get ready. I'm talking about DJ, and great job by you with his last name. I'm not going to try that.
Hey, I'm saying it every time.
Are you? I'm going with DJ.
I'm a play-by-play guy. You sort of have to.
Sure. I'm going with DJ. But DJ did not bring his game, and he struggled. He lost the ball. He got punched out right there. I think he was running timid as well. He had some nice passes, but that's the talent level he has. But can he be consistent with it? And so far, there has not been consistency with DJ. So I know the coaches at Clemson, they're going to look at that and evaluate it. So we'll see what happens with DJ. But he's got to improve, because I think certainly with Clemson and the expectations that they have this year, they cannot have performances offensively like they had against Georgia Tech deeper in their schedule.
And it's also so important, too, just for context, to look at these teams and who they played in week one for college football. Because you could look at Ohio State and say what you want about the struggles of C.J. Stroud, who saw his Heisman numbers dip, which we're going to get into in a little bit, no longer the favorite after week one. But that was against a team ranked 5th in the country, who limited Ohio State to their lowest yards per play, and point totals if you included all their games from last year. So it was one of the worst performances offensively for Ohio State in over a calendar year, but against a team that is considered, at least to start the year, to be a top 10 group. This is a Georgia Tech team with a win total of 3.5, heavy, heavy juice to the under. If you look at VSiN.com with all of our bet splits and our host plays, whole lot of our college football experts were riding that under on the season win totals for Georgia Tech, figuring it to be in the midst still of a pretty massive rebuild. So you would think for Clemson, who did not cover a first half line of about 12.5 and who needed a late touchdown from the backup quarterback, Cade Klubnik, to actually get over the hump there and cover at the end. That game went all the way up from 21 to 24 and a half when it closed. Clemson wins by 31. That, to me, when you think about expectations and opponent that you're playing to start out and where those betting markets are set in, is why you're having some of the conversation that we're having here to start today. Klubnik comes in, and look, it's one drive at the end of a game that is already over against a bad team, yet 4 of 6, 50 yards and a touchdown, and at least from the crispness level of it, if you look at the eye test, look better than Uyunglele did throughout the first 3.5 quarters. So the question now becomes, what do you do here if you're Clemson? And they said after the game, still DJ's job.
Well,
he's not in trouble.
I mean, you're going to say that, but he is in trouble because why would you even put Klubnik in there? I mean, you struggled. He struggled for most of the game. You would think, okay, let's just finish the game. But no, I think you might be considering the fact that, look, we got to look at this guy in some game action, get him on tape, evaluate some stuff from a game standpoint. Again, no preseason, no practice games or anything like that. You're going to scrimmage. I think for DJ, Ben, there's no excuses with lofty expectations. And it's hard to say, but you go out and recruit these top quarterbacks because you're looking to reload, if you will, at every position. And that's what DJ has to realize here. As a young player in college, you have to realize that, yeah, I'm looking over my shoulder right now. I can be replaced at any time just because of the expectation level with this program. So they're too talented to stumble out the gates like that, primarily because of quarterbacks. So hopefully DJ can wake up for his future. But if not, no, I think Clemson will be ready to change at quarterback because, just playing and certainly understanding the lofty expectations that they have on the year this year.
It's interesting, especially from your perspective, having played also for a team that had expectations of winning a national championship at Colorado, and how when you're in that mix and you expect, like Clemson does, to be in a college football playoff where they were the fourth betting favorite to win the national championship to start the year, it's not as simple as just, well, we're winning games, so we're willing to just ride with what we've got.
Right.
And now the question becomes, so you have Furman at home, Louisiana Tech at home, next two games before the next ACC game at Wake Forest. Presumably you would think we'd see some sort of a split because Clemson is going to be massive, massive favorites in that. But in the Heisman markets now, you've seen DJ, at least market-wide, he's in the 35-1 range. Cade Klubnik, though, who was around 100-1 most of the offseason, had seen some action down to about 80-1, sits today pretty much market-wide at 60-1 now. Okay. So the buzz is certainly picking up, and you wonder, is it worth the buy point now trying to get in? If you at least have conviction, like you certainly do, Mike, that this is far from being a guaranteed number one starting job.
Well, look at the offense, too. I mean, the way that they were calling, talking about Clemson, the way that they were calling the offense was a timid nature with DJ. I mean, there was some plays that he went down the field. There was some plays that were athletic, and he just reacted naturally with his talent level, which was great. But, you know, the structure of the offense just didn't seem like it was in sync to me, right? And so Klubnik, I mean, I don't know what he did, if that was enough to where you want to go to a further evaluation. Okay, let's get him more time. Or do you just ride it out with DJ a little bit longer? Mm-hmm. But DJ needs to wake up that Klubnik is coming. And that's what I'm saying. And that's just from the player's perspective right there. Certainly he's got to be more efficient and certainly be the type of quarterback that Clemson wants him to be, which would be more aggressive offensively for that team.
And we knew he cut down about 25 pounds, wanted to be more mobile, and yet 13 carries, 28 yards.
Timid.
And the touchdown, but a fumble just over 2 yards per carry there for Uyunglele. And you think about how those odds have changed. Really the big mover in week one. And we'll see. Is this overreaction to one good performance, or do we think this has merit, Mike? And that was what we saw in Gainesville, where Florida pulls off one of the biggest wins of any team in week one under the new head coach and Billy Napier. Take down Utah. 29-26 there is 2.5 3-point underdogs. But in that, Anthony Richardson pretty much proved to be a one-man show. When you think about a guy who is making highlight reel plays all over, rushes for 3 touchdowns over 100 yards, and was also pretty efficient through the air, 17-24, 168 yards, sees his Heisman odds now cut down. In some books, he went as short as 14-1 in the immediate aftermath of that game on Saturday night from around the 60-1 mark as we had all those preseason numbers start to form. You can find him anywhere from that 14-22-1 range right now, but anywhere from your 4th to 6th betting favorite at this point in the Heisman. How much of that are you buying based on the exceptional performance we saw Saturday?
Well, there's a combination of factors here. I mean, C.J. Stroud was not impressive against Notre Dame, but, I mean, the good reason why. You lose Smith and Jigba, and I think he was a big part of that game plan, and they had to adjust, and I don't know if people are mentioning that with Ohio State, with that type of, and that level of player, but no, Richardson stepped up. I mean, I think you take advantage of the opportunities. And against Utah, a top 10 team, He played very, very well, and so you're going to get that consideration too. So, I mean, from a Heisman standpoint, you got Bryce Young going up against Texas. I wonder how he shows out because, you know, from a Heisman standpoint, if he has a great game against Texas, okay, there's some narrative right there too. But, no, I think Richardson has clearly seized a moment, and the odds have suggested that. Obviously, if you wanted those odds prior to that game against Utah, you do that. But I don't know if I would chase it right now because tape is going to reveal more about Richardson. Teams are going to start the game plan because, okay, what has this guy turned into at quarterback, and does Florida have enough around him to support that too? So it's still a long shot to me. I'm not chasing it, though, as those odds have changed.
Well, here's what's funny, too. You have Florida taking on Kentucky back at the Swamp this week, SEC opener. We've seen a big line movement in that game, which will be a topic we discuss a little bit later on this hour alone. But it's one of those things where you don't back it up with a win in game two. And again, so much of why the general thought was this could be a tough game for Utah. It was more Utah-based, right? Having to make a cross-country trip in under difficult circumstances with so much hype and expectations. Sure. It was more, if you looked at how the betting market went at the very end against Utah, it was more of an anti-Utah play, I would say, Mike, if you really evaluate the betting market, than an on-Florida play. And we've seen that manifest already. Florida from 7-point opening favorites down to 4.5 against Kentucky. We'll get more thoughts on that later. But as you know, I mean, one bad game and all of a sudden all this fun Heisman talk on Richardson, you can just throw it out the window.
Yeah, I had 220 against Tennessee. There was no Heisman Trophy talk about me after that game.
Really?
No.
Not even a little bit?
Maybe a little bit. I was fifth.
Maybe in the general Boulder area.
No, I was voted in the top 50.
Look at you. Top 50. I didn't know you went for 220. That's impressive. We'll transition. NFL week one next here on the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all of your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Back alongside Mike Pritchard, I'm Ben Wilson from our Circa Sportsbook Studios. It is the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM, your Tuesday crew all fall here. Really excited, Pritch, not only for our Tuesday shows, but for our regular guests, which we're going to start with this week. Will Hill, our guy from New York, going to join us, VSiN contributor, a little bit later in the show, about a half hour. And then Josh Applebaum, who just started our new VSiN Daily Morning Bets show, which is pretty exciting. That thing just launched. I'm not an early morning person, but Josh obviously is, him being on the East Coast. So Josh going to join us next hour as well. Excited for those two to join us just about each and every Tuesday. And also to kind of reminisce here, Mike, because it's week one. You played in the league for about a decade, and I'm sure that this time of year always conjures up the memories going back to when, you know, your season would begin, and then I'm sure the first thing you think of, it's like rookie year, making your debuts. So we're going to see a number of guys, and important guys, do Thursday night for Buffalo and L.A.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the expectations, too, for each franchise. I remember getting to Atlanta, and, you know, you're competing in the NFC West at the time with San Francisco, New Orleans, the Rams, the Saints, and I mentioned Saints and us, Atlanta. I'm trying to remember everybody in that division at this point. I believe the Cardinals were back in that division back then, too. But anyway, you're trying to get off to a fast start. You're trying to compete. And I remember coming off a national championship, what that meant for me as a member of the Atlanta Falcons. And we had premier players. There wasn't a lot of pressure on me. I wasn't ready for that anyway. But I was ready for week one, and we played Kansas City. With that team in Kansas City in 91 with just so many great players on that roster. I remember watching tape and looking at Albert Lewis because I watched him play for so long. Kevin Ross, too, another corner. Then I'm going to have to go against those guys, right? And so you get hyped up for it. I had one catch for 17 yards. I got a picture of it.
Shut out. That's good.
Yeah. Well, Chris Miller
threw. Team almost was. But
Chris Miller threw four interceptions. And, you know, certainly you think about that pass rush that they had at the time, they overwhelmed us and we couldn't get anything going. So And then in Denver, you know, we lose in a shootout to the Chargers at home, and then we lost four in a row. And we had lofty expectations because of free agency, the the amount of money that Pat Bowlen has spent, you know, acquiring me and certainly Anthony Miller, and you start 0-4, and so you start to panic a little bit. And then you think about the Broncos and what they did. They got rid of Wade Phillips that year off a 7-9 year, and then brought in Mike Shanahan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's crazy to think about. So it's all about expectations because obviously Glanville, we ended up going to the playoffs my rookie year.
Jerry Glanville.
And then the next two years, we didn't go anywhere. So he got fired. But no, it's just about expectations. I think for week one as a better, focus in on that. You know, I would focus in on where are teams at and what are their expectations for this season. I mean, everybody's optimistic, right? But truly, what are realistic expectations for each and every franchise going into the season in 2022?
September 1st, 1991, Mike Pritchard's debut. That was a dead under game, by the way. 42 is the total, 14-3 final Chiefs over the Falcons. Chiefs covered. They were 7-point favorites. So you started your career 0-1 against the number. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. It wasn't
not
me.
Not that you knew, and it was your quarterback's
the
fault.
The team started that way.
And the whole team as well. Well, it's funny, too. You think about expectations, right? And this is such a rare situation we've had where you have your defending Super Bowl champion with some interesting questions about the health of their quarterback in Matthew Stafford, who Sean McVay over the weekend saying he is good to go, fully cleared, no limitations, 100%. But here they are, a home dog against the team that has probably the highest expectations of any, at least from a betting market perspective coming in. When you have Buffalo, 2.5-point road favorites, preseason Super Bowl favorites, preseason MVP favorite in Josh Allen, it's a lot to ask for a team who, for as much as they've accomplished in the last couple of regular seasons, and just like LA last year, they haven't really done anything yet.
Right.
It's hard for me to be in a position, especially now that we know, and at least it depends how much you believe in Sean McVay as a head coach, but now that we have at least an idea that Stafford is good to go, and there's a good deal of health being reestablished in that LA, that overall roster here, hard for me to want to run out and just automatically lay it with Buffalo on the road.
Really?
Considering, to me, these teams are pretty even roster-wise, just if you look at the raw positional groups top to bottom.
Well, I think, Ben, expectations, both of them are for the Super Bowl this year, right? Okay, motivation, that could be different. I mean, I think all offseason, Aaron Donald talked about retiring until he got some money. You know, everybody got paid. Cooper Kupp got some more money. I mean, everybody got paid, and you have a Super Bowl championship. I mean, does this team present itself right now, off the offseason they had, certainly the way that they attacked training camp, do they present themselves as a team that last year was last year, we really want to win another Super Bowl? I don't know yet. I got to feel it. I got to see it. I mean, I get it. On paper, yeah, absolutely. They look like they can repeat as champions. We haven't seen that done since Tom Brady a long time ago. And then you got Buffalo with the bad taste in their mouths. I watched that game recently again and how they lost to Kansas City. And I mean, it's like that baseball team that loses and they see the other team celebrate. I mean, think about Josh Allen on the bench just watching Kansas City celebrate. And what that might have did to a guy like that, that still is on the ascent. I just think Buffalo could be hungry. They got better on defense with Von Miller. I laid it. I'm buying into that hype now.
Oh, he's ready. Wow.
I am. Look at that. Just because maybe it's a former player in me because I'm just stewing all year and chomping at the bit to get back out there on the field. And playing in LA is not going to faze me. Playing against the defending Super Bowl champions is not going to faze me at all.
I'm fascinated that he's all in on Buffalo already.
I am.
So the big question you have to ask on the Buffalo side is you have Tre'Davious White projected to be one of the top corners in the AFC, certainly. PUP list to start the year. So out the first 4 weeks, you have one of your top draft picks in Kyir Elam. He will man one corner. And then you have a former seventh-round pick in Dane Jackson, who is, I believe, started 6 games over 2 seasons in the National Football League, starting at your other corner.
Right.
That's an interesting assignment when you go into SoFi. You have the debut here of Allen Robinson in for LA at the wide receiver position. You have a general wide receiver core where, even though Van Jefferson is being listed as questionable, we're not sure if he'll be able to give it a go. One of the tougher wide receiver cores in general to defend when you look at the numbers from a season ago and how prolific Matthew Stafford was. How do you expect that matchup to unfold when you think about just the general inexperience Buffalo will have in that secondary?
Well, Buffalo only gave up 12 passing touchdowns all year last year. Now, Trey White went down, and he went down prior to the Tampa Bay game against Tom Brady. Tom Brady lit him up, and we saw what Kansas City did in the playoffs too. But Trey White going down right before that, Buffalo had to adjust without White on the field, and it took them some time. But as a unit themselves, you get stronger and you get, I think, better defensively with personnel when you add Von Miller opposite of Rousseau there. So the matchup to me, you look in the trenches, okay, the Rams are without Whitworth and Corbett, I believe. He went through free agency. I think he went to Cleveland. So they're down two players from the offensive line who started for them last year. And that's the thing about repeating. Are the Rams better than they were last year? It's a get better league. You know, Buffalo on paper seems to be better than they were last year, at least defensively, even with Trey White banged up right now. They have a first round draft choice. Okay, get in there, young man. Your first round draft choice. You're supposed to be pretty good. We'll find out. But if you can get after the pass here, if the Rams run the football, you know, certainly that's going to make it more difficult on Buffalo. Buffalo, to me, their Achilles heel last year was the fact that they didn't have a toughness level in stopping a run. But certainly if this turns into a shootout, look at what Buffalo can do with Josh Allen, averaging almost 30 points a game last year. The matchup, and nobody talks about the Rams secondary and their defense. I know they got Ramsey, but that secondary, they had to add people like Eric Weddle along the way too, right? And so I don't know if it's just built to defend the championship at this point. We'll see, though. That's why I'm so highly intrigued about this matchup in week one.
Yeah, the other matchup, too, and you touched on it briefly, you have a L.A. running game 30th in expected points added per run play, and that includes all the postseason games from a season ago. So 30th in the league with an offensive line that graded out well above top half, especially in a pass blocking perspective a season ago. Again, I understand you, as you talk about, you have to replace a couple starters from last year, but you got basically nothing out of your running game last year, and you face a Bills team where, as you speak of, probably the one perceived weakness in that defensive line, even with adding in Von Miller to the front seven this year. So that's a really interesting matchup for me, where you have two of the more you know, the more underperforming units on these respective teams. Not sure how much you expect that to factor in, because we know how much Sean McVay and the Rams, they love to just throw the ball, and they've said, oh, Stafford, he could throw 55 times in this game. But you would think early on, no matter what they say, with Stafford's question marks of health in his elbow, he'd have to get something more out of the running game, wouldn't
you? Well, you would hope. I mean, he's getting injections in that elbow. I mean, can he throw it 40 times a game? I want to see that, I guess, to believe it at this point.
So you're also not buying the health necessarily.
Well, he's getting injections in the elbow. He's not healthy, period. I mean, that's the facts, right? Yeah. I mean, so can he hold up? I think at this point, can he hold up? It's no different than a pitcher for any team out there in Major League Baseball. Can they hold up?
Remember, we were having the same conversations about Dak Prescott going into week one last year, and he looked totally fine. Sure. That's my only hesitation. It's
injections?
All narrative.
Was he getting injections?
I don't know about injections in the elbow. You have a fair shoulder? Point about that. We'll talk college football week two line movement. There's been a bunch of it already. When we return here on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
It's football season, and bettors know that this is when the money is made. Nobody knows football like VSiN, and now's the time to become a VSiN subscriber and get our comprehensive college and pro guides. Only VSiN subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Sign up early, and for a discounted $175, you'll receive both guides and full VSiN access all the way through the Super Bowl. Or join us for $40 a month and see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Back at our Circus Sportsbook studios in downtown Las Vegas, home of the Lombardi Line on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and our Tuesday crew. Mike Pritchard, longtime NFL wide receiver. I'm Ben Wilson. Matt Santos, our outstanding producer, behind the glass. Michael Lombardi back with us on the show tomorrow. Patrick Maher returning on Thursday, just in time for the week one of the NFL season kicking off. But at the same time, Mike, while we're gearing up here for week one, we have the week of data in the books now, college football, and it's led into a very interesting amount of line movement already for week two. Probably most notably, and one of your former teammates was catching some flack for this last night, where Alabama and Texas, this is one of your marquee games on the week two card, opens in the 17 to 18 range for Alabama, and we've seen a lot of movement on the Tide. Even though these are two teams who each covered in week one, playing subpar opponents, Alabama 55-0 over Utah State, Texas 52-10 over Louisiana Monroe. But your former teammate, Joey Galloway, was suggesting last night, this thing is going to get to 30, which... Probably not. Let's just say that. Certainly a move on Alabama. Sure. And this could easily touch 21 as the money pours in, getting to about a key number. But I think 30 is a little bit
That's strong, Joey. Calm down. Easy. Certainly.
I'll let you kind of keep him in place because you guys know each other.
So. Yeah. No, Joey. No, he's funny. But no, that was interesting. A little strong right there, Joey. Calm down.
Not quite 30.
Yeah, not there. Yeah. Not there. But no, each team has a game. Under their belt, you know, it's about rosters really and stated programs. I mean, Alabama with a Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback versus a newcomer in Texas at quarterback too. Which team is going to lead the other team into mistakes? You know, the betting public right now making that line go up here, minus 20 now for Alabama. It's under 21, 3 touchdowns. Certainly, if you like that, attracted to that. You don't want to chase it. I think maybe look and see and investigate a little bit more what's going on with both programs. I mean, underneath the surface is, you know, so much transition and turnover and you know, prove it mentality, I think, for Texas. But yet you have some key players that are eyeing the National Football League right now, too. And I think for Alabama, that's part of their culture. It's been a part of their culture in terms of, okay, the next level for me is a National Football League. I know that. But my task at hand right now is a national championship. And Saban, to his credit, has been able to capture that for so many years. And high-profile player after high-profile player, but this is new to Texas a little bit. So from that standpoint, I mean, again, I don't want to chase a number, but if it does continue to climb, you know, you can look at a buyback situation. I think for Texas now, they still have to prove it, though, right? Have to prove it. And against Alabama, I don't know what the spread should be at this moment in terms of the talent discrepancy between these two schools right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, what it obviously tells you, too, is that when you have two teams who just played cupcake opponents in week one of the year and looked really, really good, the power ratings, though, have not necessarily changed. Like, this is still baked in from preseason evaluations because we don't really know it yet. And even though Quinn Ewers wasn't maybe as efficient as you'd like him to be, where he does throw an interception, but still was 16 to 24, still relatively consistent, 225 yards, numbers that wouldn't blow anybody away. At the same time, to me, when you see line moves like this on a marquee matchup so early, when you don't have a ton of data to go off of, again, because the matchups were so lopsided in week one, that tells you that the smart bettors in the market, they have made their power ratings beforehand. There's really no reason to necessarily adjust. And now that these numbers are being hung, they're ready to pounce. And that's like early in the season, as much as we can say, oh, just wait till you have the data, until you have the numbers. I don't know how much the data really tells you when you have a 42-point favorite at Alabama and a near 30-point favorite in Texas winning week one.
Right.
So you almost view this as like a true week one game in kind of similar fashion to how we saw some of those other marquee matchups have the line movement earlier last week.
Sure, and at the network, we're talking about pro tips, right? And so, for instance, from a power ranking standpoint or even you're looking at the matchup standpoint, if more games are lost than won, National Football League or college, I mean, these two elite programs, if you will, if you want to throw Texas in there, who has a better track record in terms of who's going to limit mistakes? Who's better coached? Who's more disciplined? Alabama certainly has the advantages right there. And so are they going to go out there against Texas and lose the game? The probability says to me no, but how much is that worth? Is it worth 3 touchdowns, though, against a Texas team when okay, you look at the talent, yeah, okay, they're talented. Okay, where is their mindset? I mean, can they get in gear offensively with a new quarterback, too, against that defense? I mean, how much is that worth to you as a bettor with this spread? And to me, obviously, at 18, it was worth a shot for people as it's climbed to 20 now.
Mm-hmm. How much, when you hear, though, Steve Sarkisian come out and say, yeah, we're not going to be it's just one game. We don't want to be defined by it. Sounds a lot like, we're preparing to, you know, get our you-know-whats kicked.
Well, I mean, it's excuse-making already, right? I mean, on the other side of that as a player, I never had Coach Mack talk about that.
It's one game.
No, as we're gearing up for a national championship, no. No, you do not say that. I mean, I think teams want to put it out on their chest, too, if they feel pretty good and pretty confident. If we lose, we lose. But we lost probably because we made a lot of mistakes and we didn't execute what we needed to execute. Now, Alabama, the continuity standpoint, quarterback certainly, and the new parts. I think every school has scheduled down, but they look like a machine. And then defensively, they're going to be great again. And then I just throw in the discipline aspect of it all. The only determination for me is what is that worth as a bettor? Is it worth 3 touchdowns? I mean, obviously, you missed a great number prior to the line movement here. But if it's still worth three touchdowns to you, then look at Alabama as a play here in this game.
Looking for Alabama up to 20 now. 21 would be a logical, right. A logical mover once again. But our point on all this, even when you have some preliminary data to go off of, mm-hmm. if you have a couple teams facing off against each other who have not, you know, who played cupcakes, had easy games, essentially tune-up games early,
right?
The smart money in the market and their power ratings are going to dictate a lot of where these lines go. It's really not based on past performance whatsoever. And keep that in mind as you see a lot of these numbers moving quickly, even into week two, where I don't know how much the market is really going to factor in those week one results, unless you had, say, a team playing another marquee matchup, mm-hmm. and you actually saw a lot out of those respective ones in the week one matchup. So again, we have all our pro tips as well available. VSiN.com/pro tips every single hour. Check those out. You can sort it by sport and by show. You know, one of these moves, though, and we're always trying to figure out where does it come from and how much are the raw power ratings here factor in, which you have to consider, again, with teams who won big in week one. In the Pac-12, this is one that I would not have expected to go this general direction, because USC, there was actually some smart money that came in on Rice last week as about a 33-point underdog. Trojans go out, score the most points of anybody in FBS, put up 66 against Rice, winning very, very comfortably, 66-14 in Lincoln Riley's debut. Taking on a Stanford team now in Palo Alto who played an FCS squad in Colgate. They won easily 41-10. But again, you're facing a Colgate team, very mediocre FCS opponent. However, USC opens 12, down to 9.5 on the road there, while the total has risen a couple points up to. Are you surprised by how much love early the market is given on Stanford here, moving that nearly a field goal?
You know, I think the market still wants to have discovery with SC. SC scored, 21 points defensively against Rice? And okay, wait a minute, what's going on there? So is that a plus or is that a negative? Like, do you view that as a better, the fact that SC can score defensively, or is that, again, mistakes made by another team?
When you have three pick sixes,
right,
it's like, how,
right.
Yeah, how realistically can you repeat that against legitimate quarterback play?
Sure. Now, where was the offense? Like, if you're going to get 21 or 18 points there from your defense, where was the offense against Rice? And I don't know if the market's looking at that, but I mean, I don't know if that's a discount against the SC defense or is, you know, because people, I think from a power ranking standpoint, didn't have the Trojans in that defense ranked pretty high. And in fact, I think a lot of people thought they were going to struggle. But is this a lift to that team to be able to score defensively in addition to when that offense gets into the gear that they want to get into? So many new moving parts. They have continuity, head coach, play caller, and quarterback. But you still had added pieces at the wide receiver position, the game speed, right? And
right.
A game under the belt now, will the execution be better the second time around against a conference opponent?
Well, and doesn't that also show, too, when you have a total rise 2 points, mm-hmm. and it was already pretty massive, 63.5, right. People thinking, wait, Stanford, this was a team that was near the bottom of the barrel in the Pac-12 and scoring a season ago. But by all accounts, you have a potential day one quarterback in the draft next year in Tanner McKee. Mm-hmm. It's just a question of, can they surround him with enough pieces? And, you know, McKee comes out last week again against Colgate, but still 22-27, 308 through the air and a couple touchdowns, right. Albeit with an interception. And you compare that with Caleb Williams, who, for people who are wondering, in his debut, 19-22, 249 and two scores. Not bad.
Great,
so
right.
I don't know that there's any questions really about these offenses, and it's going to be more of the litmus test for the defense. You can't probably bake in four picks and three of them going for six, I would think, on the USC side.
Expectations again, though, I think a lot of people probably thought Caleb Williams was going to do better than that against Rice, right? And so the expectations out of whack right there when you look at his stats and certainly the outcome as well.
That'll be a really interesting test,
right.
For Lincoln Riley. First
right.
Conference game going on the road there to Palo Alto, taking on David Shaw's Stanford Cardinal. We'll have more week two line movements to discuss in a little bit. But up next, Will Hill, our VSiN contributor, joins us right after this on the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Turn a loss into a win with the King of Sportsbooks. Place a one-game parlay wager with at least four legs on any Major League Baseball game. If all legs of the parlay hit but one, you'll get your stake back in free bets up to $25. Log into your account or download the app and sign up with BetMGM. To take advantage of this offer all season long, just opt into the one-game parlay insurance promotion, then place a one-game parlay wager with four legs or more on any Major League Baseball game. If you miss only one leg on your wager, you'll receive up to $25 back in free bets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Nevada, New York, or Washington, D.C. Back alongside the former NFL wide receiver and college football national champion Mike Pritchard, I'm Ben Wilson. Thanks to our entire crew as well, Andrew Ingold, our technical director, Mikhail Miranda on audio here at our Circa Sportsbook studios, and our guy Matt Santos behind the glass trying to make us look as good as possible. And speaking of looking good, we go out to New York. It's Will Hill, at not the Will Hill on Twitter, frequent VSiN contributor and a regular here on the Lombardi Line, joins us right now to talk all things week one in the National Football League. You're looking good, Will. Great to see you as always. Mike and I were having a little opposing discussion here. Mike's all in on Buffalo for week one. He already played him at laying the two. I still have some question marks, though, about the secondary for Buffalo with no Tre'Davious White throwing a rookie out there in his first game and a former seventh-round draft pick in his seventh career start on both sides of that secondary there for Buffalo. How do you imagine that matchup shaking out here into this week one Thursday game, and which side are you least on? I'm not all in on the Rams. I'm just saying. I have some concerns there just on blindly laying it with Buffalo Thursday.
Yeah, it's a good game. It's a fun game. I think the Rams are a great teaser leg to get them through the three, through the seven, up to 8.5. I think that's a good bet. I have similar concerns, like all the things you mentioned in the secondary. Plus, if you look back at last year, the quarterbacks they played a lot of bad quarterbacks on their schedule. They caught some breaks in terms of a lot of bad weather games. I think if you give McVay a lot of time to prepare, I think McVay is going to find a way to move the ball to me. I think I gave this out last week. I like the over. I think this is with the Bills secondary beat up. And I don't know how great the Bills are on defense to begin with. I think the Bills offense is, outstanding, obviously. To me, this is like a 31-28, 34-31 back and forth type of game where, and I think if you play the Bills this year, you're going to have to go for it on fourth down. You're going to have to take the field knowing, hey, 30 points is what we need to win this game. We can't be punting on fourth and one. We can't be kicking field goals, fourth and goal from the two. We need touchdowns. We need points every time we touch the ball. So I look for some higher scoring, a higher scoring outcome here. I think the Rams are a great teaser leg, and I do think it'll be a back and forth game. If you had to get me to pick a side, I probably would take the Bills just on the money line, but I'm not sure I'm going to play the side here.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting matchup. I'm looking forward to it. 5-0 too, with Sean McVay with week one openers right there in his career, so it's impressive. We'll get into some of your plays, though. I mean, one of the new parts of the Rams is in the receiving core, Allen Robinson, interesting receiving yards prop that you found against the Bills, and you just talked about that matchup potentially being an advantage out there for the LA Rams.
Yeah, like we said, a Bills secondary that's really beat up. And Robinson, look at the situation he walks into. He's had Chicago Bears quarterbacks his whole career. Bad weather, bad quarterbacks. That's going to suppress some of his numbers. Now he goes into L.A. The weather's going to be beautiful. I think Allen Robinson is going to have a monster year. He's got a pretty good quarterback, a coach that knows how to get him the ball. Plus, he's got Cooper Kupp on the other side of him taking away taking a lot of the attention from the defense. So I think Allen Robinson is primed to have a big game. His total has been bet up now in terms of the receiving yards. It's in the low 60s. I would look for him to go over. And Jefferson's hurt too, the number three wide receiver. So I think Robertson's going to get a lot of targets, a lot of looks. I could see him having a big game here. I like Allen Robinson over his receiving yards.
And part of our picks at a glance, we've got the running list of every pick made on our airwaves there in the VSiN Daily Newsletter. You can check out all of Will's plays as well, because I know you got some baseball in there as well today, Will. And yes, as we heard at least over the weekend, Van Jefferson not ruled out officially yet, but it is a firm questionable tag on him. And then where do you stand on Matthew Stafford? We have passing props on him, 269.5. I don't know how you touch that with any conviction, but what do you make of all the things we've heard based on his health, the elbow injections, and then Sean McVay over the weekend saying he's good to go, 100%, no limitations?
Yeah, it's hard to know, because if he wasn't good to go, would McVay really tell us? So you never really know with these coaches if they're telling us the truth with injuries. Again, he could be fine. He could be 100%, just like McVay is saying. But if you're dealing with an elbow, I mean, all it takes is one hit, and then that elbow is not so good anymore. So I would lean towards under for that reason. But everything we mentioned with the Bills secondary would make me want to take the over. So pretty easy pass for me in terms of the passing prop here. For Stafford in game one.
Yeah, Stafford, I mean, throws the ball a lot. I mean, certainly. And talking to Michael Lombardi and Patrick yesterday in terms of his Hall of Fame credentials. Mm-hmm. Some people might think that as well, but certainly if he gets another championship, a Super Bowl, there you go. Signed, sealed, delivered right there. But he's a tough guy. We know that about him. He's often hit, certainly up there in Detroit for over the years. Elbows are just different. Will, I don't know if you kind of relate this to baseball when pitchers and, you know, the fatigue factor or certainly elbow situations. I mean, you never hear of pitchers, at least I don't, getting injections and still going out there on the bump.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, elbow, especially with a guy, you could mention he's beat up a lot. He's tough, but you can't will yourself to more arm strength. If your arms hurt, your arms hurt. So it'll be a wait and see thing. This is a great vehicle for live betting, because if you can see early that he just doesn't have the juice in his arm, you can bet accordingly, whether that's the under or on the Bills, but it's just going to be one of those things where we're not going to really know until the game starts.
Now, that's an outstanding point. Because remember last year, we had the same questions on Dak Prescott, and when it was obvious, Dak looked good, and it was different. You were still getting, you know, 7.5, 8 in the live market. It was an auto play, at least for me last year, when it was like, okay, so much of this market is baking in Prescott's injury. Well, now that he looks good, you feel pretty comfortable with at least making a wager. Again, Will Hill joining us here on the Lombardi Line at Not The Will Hill. As far as some of the other week one games on the card there, Will, I know there's one game in particular you're looking to target a total. You talked about the earlier play here on the over 52.5 in Bills Rams. How about in the Windy City where the Niners and Bears are squaring off and you've got some action there?
Yeah, I just don't know. Again, we don't know too much about these teams, but I just don't know. Everything you hear about the Bears, everything we know about the Niners, their pass rush, their front four, I just don't know how the Bears get to more than like 14, 17 points. To me, Shanahan's going to come out with a quarterback without a lot of experience in Lance, and they're just going to rely on the running game. No, hey, if we get to 17, 20 points, don't turn the ball over. We're going to have a good chance of winning this game. The only way we're really going to give this game away is we give it away with turnover. So I think a lot of running the ball for San Francisco, Bears offense, that struggles on the offensive line. They don't have the skill players. To me, that's at all the makings here of an under conservative game plan for the 49ers, bad offense for the Bears against a really good 49ers defense. So to me, give me the under. I believe it's 41.5 here, Bears 49ers.
Yeah, I like that, Will. I teased the 49ers down. And so you teased me the fact that you look at teasers. And so I want to get inside your mind here, parameters for or that you look for when you're looking to play some teasers in the National Football League.
I like to go through the 3 and through the 7 when I'm getting points. Now, I don't mind going the other way when I'm saying -7. I'm at home and I'll go through the 3 and the 7 the other way. I just don't like to do it on the road just because, you know, a close game late, the crowd seems to take over. You know, if it's, let's say, 24 all, 5 minutes to go, the crowd's roaring. Now that's not as great of a bet. Just win the game straight up. I think, you know, these road teams just get upset more. When you're on the road, you just get more upset more often than if you're at home and you're laying 7, you're probably going to win that game more often. So a home team to go through the 3, go through the 7, to me are good bets. You got good candidates this week with the Cowboys, the Browns, the Vikings, and I mentioned the Rams at home on Thursday night. All going through the 3, through the 7, up to 7.5, 8.5, that range.
Yeah, I like Mike giving us a little preview. The old teaser play is ready to go already for week one. So Mike has trust in the Niners, which we'll talk about a little bit later, teasing them down there to the 1 on the road against Chicago. Will, before we get you out of here, I know we're so excited for all your NFL week one picks here still to come this week. Just a quick little thoughts here. MLB card, I know you've got a couple plays. Let's hear what you got, because we still have MLB to bet on every single day now through the end of the month.
Yeah, I feel like these markets get a little softer in MLB once football starts, because everyone's betting college football, everyone's betting NFL, so people forget about baseball, which is fine with me because it still pays the same. I bet Toronto today against Baltimore. Baltimore's been a team I've been blindly betting on all year. I just think they missed their chance. They went into a doubleheader yesterday against Toronto, down 2.5 games out of a wild card spot behind Toronto. Toronto swept them. Toronto buried them 2 games. Bichette hit a million homers. Now it looks like it's probably over for Baltimore. They're down 4.5. Toronto has been playing well. They've won 5 in a row. They've won 7 out of 10. So I will take the Blue Jays here at a pretty short number. And I also bet the under Phillies and Marlins. You just can't go wrong betting an under in a Marlins game. They can't hit at all. They've got some really good pitching. Lizardo going against Nola. So I will go under 7 Phillies Marlins.
All right. Will Hill, you give him a follow at Not The Will Hill. Under 7, about -120 there on the Phillies Marlins. And then pretty much a pick him there. Blue Jays and the O's for Will's baseball plays today. All right, Will, good to see you as always. Best of luck on the NFL Week 1 picks. I know we'll be checking in with you every single Tuesday. So looking forward to that, my man. Good to catch up here.
All right, good to see you guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Right. And Mike Pritchard already. I want to know what the other legs are, because, I mean, for the teasers, you got to have at least 2 to tango.
Yep, I got one.
He's got at least one.
That's a road situation, too.
Another road situation.
This is a great unknown in week one, though.
Yeah. I'm always a little more wary, especially the road teams.
Right.
Starting off, laying a big number, but you like San Francisco.
The key, though, is could there be home field advantage, though, with Chicago and my other partner?
All right. We're going to get into some player props as well, specifically Thursday Night Football when we return, hour number two on the Lombardi Line.